It was a little challenging. I saw him kind of have one go off the mitt, like off the thumb, because he was trying to scoop it there at the last minute. And so, but I mean, like, that's awesome that you're making that effort. And I was really, really happy to see some of that stuff from him. So.
It's so funny. We can't even tell if fucking the best soccer players in the world can actually finish good, but we can tell with a really high degree of certainty if a 15-year-old kid can frame a pitch properly. Hello and welcome to the American Soccer Analysis Show. I am your host, Kieran, and I'm joined by Harrison Highlife Crow and Benjamin Benito Suarez Bellman. I'm going to start today's episode. We're going to end up talking about Inter Miami, but I'm going to start today's episode right at the top so that we don't forget about it, and so that it's, if you're listening, you're going to hear it right away. An ASA contributor, a friend of the show, a friend of the kind of everybody in the soccer space, Omarvind, went missing in the last week. It's really sad. And he's in the Virginia area, the greater DC area. So if you happen to be listening to this podcast, please go check out the tweets on Keon Sabani's Twitter. It has all the information that's coming from the police. On the 0.00001% chance that somebody happens to see this, I figured I might as well say it. So Ohm, if this pops up on your podcast feed, go home, buddy. And that's all I can really say. So moving on from that, Inter Miami won five games in a row. They're popping off. They've got Orlando City in about 45 minutes from now. So this will be out after that. So if they lost, we definitely predicted that happening.
I
No
change all my
Messi.
takes retroactively.
Yes. No
Oh,
Messi tonight, though.
I have nothing but hot takes that would suffice that loss. So I would be happy for that.
But Miami have been cooking. They are leading MLS in expected goal difference. They're top of the East. They are, as I said, they've won five games on the bounce. They are certainly not keeping clean sheets, but they are scoring a boatload of goals in that five game winning streak. They've got 19 goals, which is, to say the least, prolific. They've been a very odd team. They've had a lot of injuries, whether that's Messi, whether that's young guys, kind of all throughout the team. We've seen some back three, we've seen some 4-3-3, we saw 4-4-2 this weekend against Montreal, which was an interesting development of Messi and our main man Luis Suarez playing together. Gentlemen, Benjamin, I'll start with you. Inter Miami, real or fake?
I'm gonna have to go with real, but I think we're all gonna be throwing some various caveats in there of what that's really looking like. But I think it's real. You just look at the way they play, you look at the stats, and it looks real as a team. What I think I'm maybe I shouldn't be that surprised at, but it's really just Messi and Suarez carrying the show, at least statistically. You look at Messi's goals added per game. He plays all over the field. I think the position has him as a winger right now, which I don't know. I don't think it really matters because he's at like 0.45 goals added above average per game. So more than like a half a goal per
So
game above average.
just to give that number some context, and I said this on the episode of Expected Own Goals this week in relation to Barbara Banda, who's putting up 0.6 G plus above average for Orlando
Oh
Pride.
my God.
When we built goals added like 3 years ago now, we obviously like did some historical testing and we wanted to see, okay, is Messi the GOAT? And so we ran it on some La Liga data. And we checked it against Messi and Ronaldo and Kevin De Bruyne and all the like big European guys. And like Messi's best ever season was like 0.4, 0.45. So and I think maybe even a little bit less than that. And Ronaldo was a little bit less than that. So Messi's basically putting up the best numbers he's ever put up. And obviously there's league strength considerations there, but like,
yeah, this is, big this, one, of course.
This is a pretty historic level of performance, and certainly something we have absolutely never seen in MLS before.
Well, you could argue that it's maybe not been seen, that caliber of player in that caliber of league. And I don't want to be like disparaging of MLS, because I think MLS is a pretty strong league, but we knew when he came to MLS that this league in and of itself was going to be really strong, or it was going to have some deficiencies exposed, I should say. So it's really great to see him succeed, and to succeed with such really exquisite play. But at the same time, just putting it in context, it's absolutely amazing.
I think what's most impressive for me is that he's doing it in every single phase of offense. And by phase, I mean action type here in terms of G+. Because like the only current MLS player this season who's coming close to him is Benteke. And Benteke, I think, has 0.35 receiving. Yeah, for Karen racking up those G+ over there. He's doing it all through his receiving. Like, he gets at the end of crosses and he puts them in the net with his head. Like, that's what he does over and over again. And he does it at such a high level. Messi's goals added is divided pretty much evenly across dribbling, shooting, passing, and receiving. Like, I think it's 0.15 for receiving and 0.08 for dribbling. And that's the biggest difference between them. So he's doing it all. And I think the stat that really blows my mind in addition to all of this is his passing. And specifically through the magic of expected assists, which I think is something we don't really talk about much these days, because it's so much of it's not really up to the passer, because once the passer creates the shot, there's still the shot happening. Messi has 9 assists on 2.8 expected assists. Something's up there. Like, that's him. That's not random fluke. That's him putting it perfectly every time for these players to put it in the net. That has to be a Messi effect, and that's just one of the most outrageous stats I've ever seen.
So I think some of it is Messi, but some of it is also probably fluke. Like, if you look at the last 6 years prior to this, he's at like maybe 8 or 9 assists above his like prodigious 50 or so XA, 60 XA. He's got like 70 assists, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's definitely part of it. I think the other part of it is that the guy he's playing with up front has been frankly obnoxious.
Well, that is certainly part of it.
And that's Luis Suarez, who has 11 goals from 7 XG. Look, the formal opinion of this podcast with regards to finishing is that it is a real skill that simply exists at a magnitude much smaller than all the other impactful skills of being a good striker. Suarez, as a man, has historically been a very plus finisher. He is one of the few players that we are very confident is a plus finisher for his career. And that guy is murdering his XG this year. And long may it continue, because it's really fun. And so I think that's a huge part of it, is that like, you have a guy who probably has some special sauce on his XA, and then you have a guy who's also a plus finisher, and all of a sudden you get 10 goals or 10 assists from 3 XA. FBref, I have him at 10, but we have him at 9. So I'm very curious where that missing one is. Maybe a 1 penalty or something like that in there. I think what's really interesting, Harrison, I'm curious what you think about this, is how much juice they've gotten from their surrounding guys, their Robert Taylors and their Diego Gomez's and their Mati Rojas's putting left-footed free kicks into the top corner from 30 yards while Messi's on the sideline.
Well, Rojas, for sure. Like, Rojas has definitely been on my radar, and I'm excited to see. I mean, you talk about what Messi's doing as far as like G+. I mean, he's also got a little bit of underlying numbers, especially for the limited amount of minutes that he's had. Diego Gomez, Kamashi, and it's just, yeah, these guys all have done a lot. I will say, I do have some questions about whether or not you threw out that there's kind of like with Messi, it's a 50-50 of his talent in 50-50 with the actual, maybe getting a little bit lucky with some of the expected assists. I kind of want to know, is this a gravity thing with tactics? I kind of feel like maybe he's just drawing so many extra defenders, and that tactically, it seems like when I'm watching games, Messi has one, two, three guys that are they're constantly trying to mark him and trying to keep track of him. And I think that's freeing up a lot of free opportunities for him to make these really elite passes that he's absolutely gifted with, to free up guys like Robert Taylor making those passes behind or making those runs in behind, right? And not just like Robert Taylor. I mean, let's also be real. They went and got Gressel, who for the most part hasn't been a huge attacking presence, but he definitely has his moments, and his skill level and what he's brought to this team was supposed to be wit and kind of just knowing where to exist. And I feel like he's done a good job with that at times as well. I think my biggest question right now is whether or not this team is good defensively to continue to absorb the amount of pressure that they're allowing. They need the ball. They need the ball 90% of the game to be successful. And even with needing how much of the ball that they have, their back line is just egregious and leaky and slow. And you saw it in Montreal. Montreal just basically outpaced them. That's all they did. Montreal just like, okay, well, we're going to run at you. We're going to allow you to have the ball. And then we're going to run at you and expose. Bryce Duke, six-holing Drake Callender was embarrassing. Like, yeah, honestly,
ugly. That was pretty like, ugly.
Even Callender looked, yeah, honestly,
he knew it was bad in the moment. I think it's weird because the expected goals are not good. I think they're at six. They're at like about 16 expected goals based on the ASA table,
and that's majoratively counterattacking. Counterattacking mm-hmm. assumes you're not going to have a lot of chances. Mm-hmm. You're going to probably exceed those chances and exceed those expected goals, because those chances are going to be better than what you'd expect because of lack of defensive pressure, lack of defensive mm-hmm. bodies there blocking down shots. So you're going to exceed, but they're giving up even more expected goals than what you would think, right? Yeah. On top of leaking those extra goals. So mm-hmm. look,
and the thing is, it could be worse, because they're at what, 16 goals on that, and they have the most interrupting goals added of any team of the league. So that means they're still breaking up some plays that are in these dangerous areas that are then not turning into more expected goals. So it's definitely a risky type of game model, but it's a consistent game model. Like, I've been looking through these game flows up on Blue Sky / Mastodon, and sure, the games themselves are so spiky. Like, you'll have these lulls in play on both sides where you don't see much goals added activity happening, and then you'll see a big spike in either direction. It'll be a goal for one of the teams. And this has been consistent for the past five games that they've been winning. So maybe, Kieran, I'll turn it back to you, since we've been sort of nattering for a little bit. Do you think it's a consistent, do you think it's an effective game model? Do you think this is something that they can replicate?
Sustainable.
You know, sustainable. There you go. Do you think it's sustainable?
It's a good question, because in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. Like, I think they have a lot of players who can cover ground for their guys who can't, right? Like, at this point in his career, like, Luis Suarez historically is a very excellent defensive striker. He is not at this point in his career. Messi is giving you basically nothing defensively. Sergio Busquets, as cerebral as he is, does not cover the ground defensively. He used to. We have seen, for as many like amazing Busquets shoulder drops where he rolls a guy and then plays a crazy pass forward, we have seen him like get blown up in transition because he can't run. Jordi Alba is not the guy he was. So I think in some ways, yes, but I think you're like tactically, yes. I don't think there's anything. I think they're making the right trade-offs for the talent they have. Like, when you have better attacking talent, you should turn the game into a track meet, especially when you have weak defensive talent. Like, you should say, okay, we're going to beat you and we're going to win 4-3 or whatever. I think the difficulty for them is that, like, They have four guys in their top 10 minutes played who are over 35 in Busquets, Suarez, Alba, Messi. And if even one of them goes down, you are in trouble. Like, you are immediately playing a deeply unsuited player for those roles. So, I mean, that's where my hesitancy lies, is kind of with how durable are those guys. I think Tata has done a good job of not overplaying them so far. Like, Busquets has the most games played, and he's only played like 85% of the minutes. Suarez has only played 75% of the minutes. Messi about 75% of the minutes. Alba about 2/3 of the minutes. They've been pretty smart. Messi's not playing tonight. And I think that's probably the right approach. I would expect they're going to punt League's Cup. And they're going to be like, yeah, you're not playing. Or you'll play one game or whatever.
If we make the final, you can play the final.
Yeah, or like you'll play the first group game and the third group game, but you won't play the second.
You think MLS is going to allow – and I know. MLS isn't going to really dictate. I'm not putting tinfoil hat on or anything. But there is a level of expectation that Messi is going to be a part of that tournament.
I think so, but I think there's also an expectation that Messi's going to play your team away, and teams are selling out football stadiums for games he doesn't play in. So I think it's like whatever happens, happens. It'll be like, oh, Messi's doubtful with a hamstring tightness, and he didn't play today, but he plays game one and game three or whatever it is.
Yeah, okay. I could see like, you know, a couple games or like take a sub at the 50th minute or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to not play, but they'll rotate.
His debut show, you can just dump him in the 80th and he'll still get you his highlights.
Yeah, yeah, clearly.
That's true.
Clearly. So that's a huge part of it. I think an interesting angle to talk about this team, and this is pertinent because the player salaries leaked today. They were not posted by the PA. Somebody found them on an MLSAW, like an open MLSAWS link or something like that, which is incredible. But Miami are absolutely pushing the bounds of every roster talent mechanism that there is in the league. And they've done that by adding Tomas Aviles. They've done that by adding Gressel as a free agent. They've done that by getting David Ruiz and Diego Gomez and Federico Redondo as U22 guys, but they've also gone and they got Leo Afonso through the draft, and they've got Noah Allen and David Ruiz as like homegrown academy guys who've like come up. They've got TAM guys throughout the team. They've got every roster mechanism you can get. They've used their buyout. They've done everything you can possibly do except for sell a player for a big fee and then use the cam from that, which, or the allocation from that, which might happen with Kramashi or Drake Callender. Anyways, where are you guys at in terms of Chris Henderson and Inter Miami and the job they're doing?
I mean,
overall,
Chris Henderson like always has done great. Like, think about, Seattle's not in the position that Seattle is in without, you know, Chris Henderson.
That's the right name, by the way, right? It is Chris Henderson?
Yeah, it's Chris Henderson. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, they knew exactly what they were doing and grabbing who they were grabbing. I mean, that wasn't – I think that was a bigger blow than – it's not right of me to compare, like, front office types, because it's – I had to think about, like, okay, is it actually a bigger blow than Atlanta? The bottom line is Chris Henderson has been a vital piece of every organization, both – at Seattle and Miami, and he's doing a dynamic job at their helm. He is doing a hell of a job.
I think that's a really actually a really interesting conversation. We've been arguing about this a lot in ASA Slack lately about the impact of coaches and of scouts and of front office people and how you can actually parse out the impact that they have. This was in the context of, I believe, who was it who stole, LAFC stole the Columbus technical director,
right?
One of the Columbus guys who's not Bez.
Mm-hmm.
And a Philly guy went somewhere.
Recently, the other way around, Colorado director of scouting went to Philly.
Yep. That's what it was. I had it backwards. So it's very difficult to like know who is driving what. It's really hard to know from the outside. Like, this was Chris, like Messi was Chris Henderson's deal. Like, that deal was nobody's deal. It
No,
was Adidas and Apple and MLS's deal.
that I mean that's Beckham's deal, right? Like that.
But I think the interesting thing with what Chris Henderson has done is he has been very, 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 very good at pivoting, where like it was extremely unclear how they were going to make their roster cap compliant this year, given Busquets was going from a TAM deal to a DP deal, given Suarez coming in, given Alba coming in. And you had like a lot of guys with not amazing track records for you or were injured or whatever that you had to get off of. And getting off of Gregor and Mota and Corentin John and like all the bodies that they were able to get off of without like we've seen this before, like with really good teams who have people they need to get off, where like the Galaxy had this happen with Jonah Dos Santos or with Gio Dos Santos, sorry, where like they just had to cut him on the last day and he was making $10 million, or $8 million or whatever. It's happened with TFC where like Edgar Ekeche is just an anchor on your roster that you have to eat the buyout eventually.
There's our that remember that guy for today.
I do not remember that guy.
Oh, I do. I do.
I still remember with Edgar Ekeche that his debut was against Colorado in CCL in February, and it was freezing, and he
Oh, I
came on as
remember that game.
and he came on as a sub, and he cranked the bar, and I was like, oh my God, he's gonna be so good. And he was not so good.
Sorry about that one.
But yeah, so I think that's kind of the like hidden thing is that obviously Miami have this amazing talent, but they've actually done a lot of really, really smart and astute background things to like get this team in place.
I mean, I think that's the biggest thing for me. Like, the biggest question mark with, like, obviously, Messi and Suarez were going to be terrific. I don't think, like, when Matt Doyle talks about everyone doubting this team, I don't think anyone doubted that they would be just luminaries in this league. I think everyone doubted that the team would be able to carry them or they would be able to carry the team. Like, in those moments, you know, sometimes they're not running and won't play defense. And so the team has to carry them. And sometimes they're literally carrying the team into the back of the other net. But the way this roster has been constructed, like I thought getting rid of Gregorio was the wrong move. I
Agreed.
thought without him, the spine was going to fall apart, but it hasn't. And what I've been so impressed with is like none of the non-big name players, and even some of the big name players, they've been pretty middling when you average out all of their G plus stuff. But the fact that they're being rotated in so heavily so early in the year. Like that was the thing. Everyone was like, this should be okay if they can make the rotations work and they do it early enough and don't burn the big guns out fast. Everyone else has been hurt so far. Their minutes have been managed and everyone else has been able to fill in these roles. And even if they're not outstanding, like, you know, Julian Gressel's not doing the amazing, ball delivery progression that he was doing for Vancouver and for Atlanta back in the day. But he can play every position there is at a replacement level or above a replacement level. And that's how they're using him this year. That's how he's making his over $1 million in town. So that's all on that's not I'm I mean it's on the whole staff, it's on Sam Gregory, it's on everyone involved in the front office. But Chris Henderson's leading that effort and is taking the job that ownership is giving him and make this work, and he's made it work.
I'm going to give you guys some stats, and I want you both to tell me real or not real. First stat, Inter Miami have far and away the best non-penalty XG per shot in the entire league at 0.15. The next closest team is DC at 0.12, Whitecaps 0.12. Everybody else is kind of like 0.09 to 0.11. They are like middling in terms of shots per 90. They're taking about 12, which is actually on the low end, but their non-penalty expected goals per shot are obscene. Real or not real, Harrison?
Real?
Just on the talent of those guys.
Well, I'm confused. Are you giving us real stats or fake stats or
No,
what?
no, sorry. These are all real stats, but I mean, like, do you think they will continue? Do you
Oh
think
no, I
it's like
don't.
a thing that we should believe.
I want to enjoy the fact that like Miami has created a super team, but I don't think it's sustainable. I know I said that last year about St. Louis and I ended up being wrong. And
you ended up being right. They went out in the first round of the playoffs and sucked. And they're mid-table this year.
They cratered to SKC in a lot of ways. Right. But I thought that crater was going to happen a lot sooner. I think it's going to happen a lot sooner to Miami. I think that they do. Yes, they have some really good players. We talked about that already. I don't think that it's real. I really don't. I don't see how they can continue to do the stuff that they're doing from an underlying perspective and be successful. I'm sorry.
Ben, I think real or not real? You think it's real?
I think it's real. Where I am willing to concede to Harrison is I am worried about the defense. I think they're getting a little bit lucky right now, and they've had some games where they just blow out the other team so bad that leaking in two or three won't matter. But I don't think that's going to be every game. But in terms of offense, I think this is real. I think they are willing to be patient. I think they are willing to find the right moments to unlock. I keep coming back to that crazy Suarez goal from Messi against Red Bull, where Messi just holds it on the corner of the box for like 5 to 10 seconds and no one pressures him because they're terrified too.
Yeah, and then
because they know once they do, he goes in the box. And then Suarez drifts offside, drifts back onside beside Sean Nealis, and Messi goes ding, ding, and it just goes in. And you like at the start of that split second of play, you might say the expected goal was like 0.01, and then it ended in the back of the net. That's something they can repeat, which is terrifying.
I have two responses. All right. Number one, I think to a degree, if you just wanted to ask me, is Messi going to sustain what he's doing? Yes, I will 100% agree. Messi will sustain. Will Luis Suarez sustain? Yes, I think he can. However, I think Messi's minutes are going to go down. I think Suarez is going to go down. And I think the level of play that these guys have, they're just not going to sustain that high level. So I think that the offense is going to drop down. I think that overall, this is a competent attack. I don't think it's a great attack. I think that against better teams, teams are starting to figure out how to play against Miami. And if they continue to give up early leads, teams are going to do better at bunkering against Miami. They're going to figure out how to bunker against Miami. Montreal not being able to bunker properly against Miami, I think is probably laughable and kind of hilarious. I mean, they gave up four set pieces that were really bad in the attacking third, just in the second half alone, and leaving Ariel Lassiter to defend and mark Luis Suarez is laughable. Like, it's really sad. So I think to put them in that position to where they're playing from behind, they're going to face opponents that are better at bunkering, better at locking down, and better at saying, you know what, we're going to allow people that aren't named Messi to beat us. And when you don't have Messi and you don't have Suarez, because you played so Doyle, you made a great point about the amount of minutes that are being managed, but they've been playing so many games.
Did you just call me Doyle?
I did.
I'm Doyle's nephew.
Are you?
That's my bit on Twitter, is that Doyle is my uncle.
Yeah. So
as long as the baldness doesn't run in the family, I'm happy.
Dude, you have such a great head of hair. No, there's no way. There's no way. Those Doyle, curls. Nah.
Doyle doesn't listen to podcasts, so he'll never hear that. But if you hear this, you can let Doyle know. So I'm going to say I actually don't think that level of shot quality is going to continue. If you look at, again, MLS is very weird because there are very few leagues with our level of parity. But if you look at European top five leagues, even like the most dominant teams don't really crack 0.13. And even the like dominant teams who play mostly counterattacking soccer don't really crack 0.13. So I would expect some of that will come to earth. And I think you'll see a corresponding increase in their shot volume, where like their attack will mostly look the same, but it will be constituted somewhat differently. I talk about this a lot with like striker development stuff, where like people will be like, oh, I want a striker who's like a better finisher. And a really fun way to think about the math is like, Okay, you can have a striker who's a 10% better finisher. Like they finish 10% above their XG forever. Or you can have a striker who takes an extra shot a game. Or you can have a striker who takes 10% better shots on average. And it's like, oh, like, yeah, just take more shots and like take better shots. Like that's way better than finishing better. That's awesome. So I think we'll see that the attack is real, but I don't think it's going to look like this the whole time. Okay, another stat, real or fake. Inter Miami are bottom 10 by XG conceded. They're like eighth worst XG conceded, but they've played more games than other teams. So they are like somewhere around mid-table if you average it out per game. They are also about mid-table by things like progressive passes allowed, passes into the penalty area, opposition box touches. They grayed out as about an average defensive team. Ben, real or not real, Miami average defensive team?
I think that's more real than fake. Like they might slip a bit. Like I think that's where the interrupting G plus comes in. But I don't think they're the worst. Like I think they're better than the Revs. So I think they're good enough that their offense will carry them the rest of the way. So I'm a little worried, but mostly real.
Harrison, real or not real, average defensive Miami.
I think it's about the same. Like I think they're pretty on par. I think they may be a little bit better than what they have seen. Maybe a little bit of tactical nuance and the changes and stuff makes them a little bit better. Their per 90 stats are pretty abysmal. They put them in the same ballpark as, as the Timbers and Earthquakes, when it comes to like what they're allowing in the final third and their progressive passes, like I don't know. I just don't think they have. I don't think they have the right players to dictate the sort of game that they want to play, defensively, and I think that they're a little bit at the mercy of when they get possession, maintaining it. Otherwise, I think that things can go very bad for them very fast, and it does.
I definitely agree with that. I think they defend with the ball. They're very much a possession as defense team, and then crack them open when you have that opening that your Wizards could exploit for sure.
Yeah, I think I'll be very curious to see if they lean into that even more, because one of the things we've seen in the stat trends historically is that pressing declines throughout the year. Mostly due to fatigue and also the fact that we are a summer league, so playing in 80% of the markets in this league in July sucks ass. And Miami are like a upper third pressing activity team, which is kind of surprising given that their two like attacking guys don't really press.
They
So
feast on it though. I mean, that happened at one of
they
the goals
do.
against Red Bulls is someone pressed, Suarez picks it up right behind the defender, dumps it to Messi, and it's an instant goal.
They
So
absolutely do see the benefits of those transitions. So I'm very curious to see if that skews a little bit more. I think this team will decline a little bit defensively, again, for the same reasons. I think their press will drop off a little bit, and I think that the physical asks of, I think it's fine to ask like seven players to cover for four for stints. But I think it's very difficult to play that way for a long time. I have this like pet theory that part of why PSG have like crumpled in the late stages of the Champions League every year is because while Mbappe, Neymar, Messi for a time, whoever are amazing, when you are like the other eight guys accounting for those three guys for 50, 60 games, which like the reality is the MLS season now with all the cups and all the extra competitions, like you're gonna play 50 games. When you are the eighth guy in the 47th game and you're like, oh my God, again, I got a track for you, it gets really hard. So that's my, I think they might decline a little bit. And the third one that I wanna shout out, because I want to give him his flowers, because I think there's a reasonable chance he moves. Drake Callender, 16 goals from 18 XG. He was about a zero goalkeeper last year, minus two. He was plus two the year before. He's plus three through his season so far. This year, he conceded one, an own goal somewhere in there. Drake Callender continuing to be a plus goalkeeper in MLS, real or not real, Harrison?
I think it's real. I mocked him a little bit for the Bryce Duke goal. But I think he's maturing. I think overall he makes a lot of really good decisions. And I think being the keeper with the defensive line that Miami has, that is going to basically focus on and at least for the next couple of years, is going to put a preference with ball winning and ball utilization along that back line, guys that can use their feet. I think that he's going to be necessary to be above average. I think he's going to have to be. Otherwise, I think really quickly he's A, going to lose his job, and B, they're going to find somebody else better, because you kind of have to be a little bit better. You have to stand out a little bit more. So I take it as real.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I like him as a keeper. I don't think he's outstanding. Like, I think, I don't know if he should move. I'd be concerned for his career if he moved outside of MLS, but I do think that if he gets replaced in Miami, most teams in MLS should be trying to bring him in. That's where I'm at him. So I guess I think he's a plus MLS keeper. I think he's going to get better. I just don't think he's outstanding.
I think that's perfect, because yeah, I don't think he's awesome, but yeah, agreed. I think that he's an above average. I think that's a good balance, Ben.
So here's a fun thought experiment. Drake Callender makes $300,000 a season. His contract expires at the end of next season. You have three choices, four choices with him vaguely. You can sell him for, let's call it, low single digit millions and bank the allocation. And then you have to find a new goalkeeper. You can extend him for some number above what he currently makes. I'd be curious what you think he would get. Or you can trade him within the league for resources. If you are Chris Henderson, given the win-now-ness of your team, given his contract expires in 18 months, where are you headed, Benjamin?
I think I try and resign him. I think I try and keep him below the TAM cap. What, it's like approaching 700K now.
653 or 676.
So. Yeah, it's getting close to 700. I don't want to go over that. Like, I wouldn't go over that. I'd try and keep it closer to 500, but I don't know if you can flip a keeper for a better keeper so easily, because Colorado's been trying to do it for a couple seasons, and Zach Steffen has the worst metrics in the league right now. So I say you ride with what you got and try and keep him at a reasonable cap it. That's my opinion right now.
Who could have seen Zach Steffen being terrible coming? What a shocking surprise that is. Harrison, what would you do?
So I don't disagree with Ben necessarily, but I would go in another route. I would probably flip him for resources, because anytime you can steal resources from another team and make them pay, I think that's a net positive. And then I think you take those resources that Chris Henderson does so well and you dump them into the rest of your team. And honestly, I get it. I get that there's teams that have struggled to find good goalkeepers, but it just feels like those teams are bad. Sorry, Ben. That feels like a shot at Colorado. As
why would you say that about the New England Revolution?
It entered my brain and it was like, well, that's not fair. But at the same time, every year there's like four or five keepers that you're like, why are they still backups? Every year we see four or five different guys in this league that you're like, oh, well, maybe some other team will give them a shot. And then there's some other player that's like getting his time. I mean, you look over at LA Galaxy and they went and signed John McCarthy this past offseason. He's doing great for them, cost them hardly anything.
John McCarthy is second in the league for post shot XG plus minus.
Yeah,
behind,
and we've known this for
behind,
years.
Behind,
we've known this for years.
Behind Austin's Brad Stuver, who was a backup in NYC before they took him in the expansion draft.
Who we knew was good for years.
And the third is Matt Friess, who was a historical backup.
Dane Sinclair. He came through faster, but
and then you've got a few other guys. You've got Zach McMath is in there. You've got Berkey Celentano.
Oh, Zach McMath's up there, you say?
Yeah, Zach McMath. Zach McMath. So I think it's a valid point. I think I skew towards I would sell him. Because I think that for a few reasons. I think one, I think having a reputation as a selling club is a good thing in MLS. Because for young players, like it is actually meaningful that you'll let players move on upwards. And the second is that, like, so let's say you have to re-sign him for 600K. If you have to re-sign him for 600K, that's a huge hit to your budget. But if you can sell him for $2 million or $1.5 million and sign a new goalkeeper for 600K, like that is a, you have $900,000. You can pay 300K to buy him back down to six to 300K from six to three. And then you have $600,000 left over to do whatever you want with. And I think given how win now they are, that's where I would be. Any other points on Miami, or shall we, do we have a guy to remember? Do we have a draft update, or are we just jumping straight into trivia?
I think we're just jumping straight into trivia. I don't have a, I mean, if you really want to do a remember that guy, I think I would quickly, I mean,
No. We can jump into the trivia.
I'm still winning. You're still losing. Sorry, folks.
Oh, and even after my huge Benteke weekend.
You're beating Harrison now, though, so there's that.
Nice.
I mean, that's not hard. I feel like, you know, everybody's done at this stage.
Alrighty. Yeah. We've got trivia. We do have trivia, and it is vaguely Miami themed. It's not vaguely. There's a lot of Miami questions in here. So let's get into it. Ben, you won last week, I believe. So Ben, I'll let you start it off. 1 to 6. What question do you want, my friend?
Let's go 3.
Alrighty. MLS and Miami top scorer Luis Suarez has 11 goals across the 7 games he's scored this season. Suarez has also played for 7 clubs prior to Miami. Going back and forth, I want you to name Suarez clubs until you can't. So Ben, you're going to go first. Whoever is the first one to get it wrong will lose, and the other person will get 2 points.
Grêmio.
Grêmio, that is correct. That was his most recent stop. Harrison, Suarez club.
Liverpool.
Also correct. Ben,
I was so glad that's correct.
Barcelona.
Also correct. Harrison, you're back up.
You played for Atletico Madrid?
He did play for Atletico Madrid. We've got 3 clubs left. Ben, you are up.
Nacional.
He did play for Nacional. He went back to his native Uruguay. 2 left. Harrison, this is the last one you need to get, and then you just got to hope that Ben can't get the hardest one. Do you have it in the locker?
No, I don't.
I know the easy one, not the hard one. So.
throw a guess out.
And Nacional, he only played for one down there, so I'm taking it from it's Europe. I just remember his move from Liverpool. He didn't play for another EPL team, I'm pretty sure. I'm done. I'm done. Yeah, give it up.
Ajax. All right.
Ajax.
Ajax.
Any guesses on the last one, Ben?
Oh God, I've got no idea.
Another Dutch team, Groningen.
Oh,
Groningen, yeah.
I wouldn't.
They were green, I believe. All right, Ben takes a 2-0 lead. Harrison, you can equalize here, 1-6, except for number 3.
4.
This is a great question. This question is based off of an article our new ASA contributor, Chase Hoffman, wrote last week, denigrating one of the answers to this question. His article was about the Thomas Rongen line. So coaches who coached 100 MLS games with a points per game of 1.29 or lower. Over under, Harrison, you can either pick the line or have Ben pick the line for you. How many coaches were below the Thomas Rongen line? So not including Mr. Rangan himself.
I'll let Ben set the line.
All right, Ben, how many coaches have 100 MLS games but below 1.29 points per game?
I'm going to set the line at 13.
All right, Harrison, over under 13 coaches, 100 games, 1.29 points per game.
I'm going to say under. I would have set it at 10.
You are correct. The answer is 7. The answer is 7, so 2-2. The answers, we got Wilmer Cabrera, Robin Fraser, Fernando Clavijo, Luchi Gonzalez, who I have in my notes as Yuchi Gonzalez, Kurt Anolfo, Velko Panovich, and the eponymous Josh Wolf. You know what? That list is actually much better than I was expecting for coaches.
It's also a lot more recent than I thought it was going to be, too. I was expecting some more old names in there.
Yeah, Robin Fraser having 100 head coach games is pretty wild. But you know what? The sneaky thing with Robin Fraser.
Good old Chivas, RIP.
Yeah.
Chivas, yeah.
Yeah.
Those
same with Cabrera.
Yeah, those 15 games with like 0 points per game really.
Basically, if you sucked with Chivas, it didn't count. No one docked against you.
Alrighty, 2-2. Ben, you're back up.
Let's do one.
David Beckham famously received the ability to purchase an MLS franchise at a discounted price. I believe it was $25 million as part of his initial LA Galaxy contract. The idea to do so was recommended by who? And I'll give you a hint. It was his manager at the time, and they are a celebrity in their own right. Not soccer manager, like celebrity manager.
Yeah. Crap. I feel like I should know this because I watched that Beckham documentary recently. Oh, God.
Manager turned celebrity said, hey, you should get the right to buy a franchise in here.
I don't know. I don't know who his manager turned celebrity was.
You got no guesses?
No guesses.
Alrighty, Harrison, you can steal. It's a well-known name. You'll both know who it is.
Michael Jordan.
Reputable Matt talent agent Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan took a break from the Birmingham Barons to manage Beckham's career.
He's like, hold on. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to perfect this too.
No, the answer is Simon Fuller of American Idol. The talent agent who started One Direction.
What the?
Like, you're both gonna know this person, but neither of us had any.
Yeah. No, I know who Simon Fuller is.
Oh, really? I have no idea.
No, hold on. No, what I'm what I'm realizing now is I think I've confused Simon Fuller with Simon Cowell.
I think you have.
they're not the same person. So you know what? I'm gonna give you both the pass, and it's very unfortunate that you picked that question, Ben.
Sorry,
folks. As I said, American Idol, I was like, that's not his name.
Well, he was like, I think he created American Idol, or he was like a part of. Yeah, but they're just two different individuals with the name Simon involved with that whole process.
It's been a long day. Harrison, you're up. What question do you want?
Two.
Alrighty. Multiple choice for you. Inter Miami have 4 official supporters groups. Which of these is not the name of a real Inter Miami supporters group? You have the Siege. You have Vice City 1896. You have Socios de Miami. And you have the Southern Legion. So you have the Siege, Vice
City.
I'm
pretty sure about the Siege, and I'm pretty sure about Southern. So I'm going to guess Vice City.
Vice City 1896. Unfortunately, that is a real Miami supporters group. Ben, would you like to steal between
pretty
the
sure
Siege?
Socios, because I think I'm with Harrison. I think I recognize the other two.
You are correct. Socios de Miami was a Kieran creation. I believe the other team is a, like something pink and black in Spanish.
Okay.
So 1 point for Ben, because it was multiple choice. I'm not giving you 2 for it. 3-2 for Ben. You can take a commanding lead here if you get
6.
All righty.
Let's do it.
We've seen a lot of four. This is the only non-Miami question. We've seen a lot of four corners offenses as teams have tried to kill the game in the NBA playoffs this summer. Which MLS team leads the league in G+ difference across all four corners of the pitch? So only G plus earned in the corners. And I will say it makes
just corner sense. Zones like zone
yeah.
one. And zone.
Yeah. So I think on the ASA website, it is zones 1, 6, 24, and 30. But it makes sense when you think about it, is the hint I'll give you.
Philly?
It's a good guess. I believe they're second, but no.
Well, I probably correct. Just gave it to Harrison.
I'm going to guess DC United.
It's a good guess, but not correct.
Is it St. Louis?
No, it is Notorious Crossy Boys, Nashville.
Oh, of course.
Oh,
of course.
Boo!
Yeah. Gary Smith and his religious offense hitting the mark with all the crosses. Alrighty, last question. You have been handed the chance to win with a correct answer here, Harrison. Number 5. Miami man Lionel Messi leads the league in G+, followed closely by my beloved Christian Benteke. Which new contract signee, relatively new contract signee, is dead last in G+ above average? The entire league, every player in the league, this player is dead last G+ above average.
I feel like that's a Toronto player.
It could be. It might not be. You never know.
He's new to MLS this season?
No. He signed a contract extension in the last year or so. But he's not new to MLS, no.
I know Diego Rossi is having a terrible year.
That would be a pretty terrible year for
Diego Rossi. G plus.
Worst in the whole league. Non-goalkeepers, by the way. I didn't include goalkeepers.
Is it Polito?
The tension was palpable for a good reason. Harrison has taken the dub. Alan Polito is the worst player.
I think I'm 90% certain one of you guys mentioned it last week. Or yeah. 2 weeks ago.
I think it was in the Slack recently too.
We've discussed this recently. Mm-hmm. That's the only I was searching the archives
there. Yeah, somebody asked if Rigoni was the worst DP in the league, and I said maybe Alan Polito because I had written the question 20 minutes before.
There it is.
So Harrison, 4-3 win. Any speeches? Any awards? Yeah, free throw form.
Don't spend on goalkeepers, kids. Buy them. Become a rock star, and they give them to you for free. That would be my.
I like it. Alrighty, folks. Well, that's it for this week. We will see you in 2 weeks, where we won't be talking about Inter Miami. We'll be hitting summer, and there'll be some fun things coming in the summer. I'll tell you that much for sure. That's it from us. If you want to support the website, if you want to support the show, head over to our Patreon. There's one tier. It's $5 a month. You can get in there. People have been talking about the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, MLS, NWSL, politics. Not that much politics. It's been a lot of fun in there lately. Making fun of the league, it's always a blast. And it's other people who like stats as well. And there's a job board. So if you're looking to get into soccer, people are posting analyst jobs in there, and you never know who might see it. So that's it from us. Enjoy the rest of your week. And as always, enjoy the soccer. The mentality of a player in this league.